When wishes were horses and beggars could ride, in a stone castle by the sea there lived a rich laird.
What am I supposed to choose? There are so many.
And so he left the trail, and he followed the sound of the music.
I am the goat from the hills and the mountains. And when I have finished eating these herbs and these vegetables, then I shall eat you, too.
Once upon a time, and welcome to the Story Story Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Ann Harding, and I have some stories for you. This is a podcast to hear traditional stories told by some of the best storytellers in the world. It will take you to long ago and far away, and will bring you back safely. As the earth has warmed up, I've started waking up with the early morning light. I leave the windows open and hear the songbirds as they claim territory or look for a mate. One morning as I lay motionless and listened, my ears picked up a tune that sounded familiar. It wasn't the robin singing, I could hear that melody. This one seemed more familiar. Was that bird whistling Yellow Submarine? The stories for this episode are about the gifts the sea gives us. The first story is told by Alton Chung, a native of Hawaii who tells finely spun stories rooted in a unique culture and a one-of-a-kind perspective. He has told before on the podcast, and I'm so glad to say, this is him telling The Luminous Pearl from his CD, The Spider Weaver, and Other Tales from Asia.
Long time ago, in a far and distant land, far off in the eastern sea, there lived the great Dragon King and his daughter, Li Mei. Now, she was a very clever girl, and her father was hard-pressed to find her an equally clever husband. See, Li Mei did not like any of the potential husbands who came to visit.
Too short, too tall, too fat, too thin, too lazy, too serious. Daughter, what are you looking for in a husband?
Oh, father, I have no need of wealth, or of a man who's too full of his own importance. What I'm looking for, father, is someone who is compassionate and honest and brave.
Compassionate? Honest and brave? Oh, you don't want much, do you, daughter?
One day, the Dragon King heard of a poor young man who lived near the bend in the river at the foot of a tall mountain, who was known for his compassion, his honesty, and his bravery. The king decided to test this young man to see if he might be a suitable match for his daughter. The next night, this brave young man, who was named Chen, dreamed of a beautiful young girl who was waiting for him at the bend in the river. Oh, the dream was so real that it woke him up, and he woke up his twin brother, Li, and told him of his dream. Now, although they looked the same, Li was not nearly as nice as his twin brother, Chen. Li was always jealous of his brother, and now he was jealous of his dream. I mean, if the dream came true, then Chen would have a gorgeous girlfriend. And Li, he would have no one.
Oh, dreaming again. Dreams are rubbish. They mean nothing, brother. Go back to sleep.
So Chen lay down and went back to sleep. But that nasty Li, he got dressed and crept out of the house. And where do you think he went? That's right. He went off to the bend in the river. Now, while Chen was sleeping, the dream came again. And once again, there was this beautiful woman beckoning to him, waiting for him at the bend in the river. Again, it was so real that the dream woke him up. And although it was still dark, Chen could see that his brother, Li, was gone. Chen quickly dressed and hurried to the bend in the river, only to find Li already there waiting. Before he could call out to his brother, something amazing happened. Moonbeams cascaded down from the heavens and illuminated the entire area with strange silvery light. Shooting stars arced across the sky, adding their own shimmering light to the magical scene. And then there, standing in a clearing near the bend in the glittering river, Chen saw the Princess Li Mei, the beautiful girl from his dream. Both brothers were captivated by her beauty, and she, in turn, liked them both. As being identical twins, they looked exactly alike. Ah, which one of you is compassionate, honest, and brave? Oh, well, I am.
Oh, yeah, me too. Compassion, oh, very compassionate, and honest. Oh, honest as the day is long, and brave. So very brave.
Ah, well, I'll give you both a test. The one who can bring to me the luminous pearl that shines in the night shall be my husband. The pearl is in the keeping of the great dragon king of the Eastern Sea. She then presented both of them with magic fans. These fans will allow you to make your way through the sea to the palace of the great dragon king. I will be here again at the next full moon. Now Li, feeling that his brother would get the pearl before him, dashed off at once. But Chen stayed behind and spoke to Li Mei and got to know her better. And the longer they spoke, the more he liked her. And they chatted until it was nearly dawn. Chen then said goodbye and set off on his quest for the pearl. Chen headed back to the house that he shared with his brother, only to find that their only horse was gone, and that Li had also taken every scrap of food in the house. Chen had no choice and began walking to the Eastern Sea. For days he struggled along, eating fruits that he could pick from the trees, drinking water from the river, and sleeping under bushes. In the meantime, Li had reached a village on the river that had been hit by a massive flood. Oh, the people were stunned, and Li asked them what had happened. They told him that the river had overflowed its banks, the village and the fields had been flooded. Oh, the people were starving, and the only way they could save their village was to go to the great dragon king and borrow his wondrous golden dipper.
I will go to see the great dragon king and get his golden dipper for you, if you would lend me a boat to get to the sea.
Well, the villagers were very grateful for Li's help and lent him a boat that he might be able to ride the raging river to the sea and continue on to the palace of the great dragon king of the Eastern Sea. When Chen arrived at the village, he stopped to help them, although he was hungry and very tired. And he heard them chatting about how the golden dipper of the great dragon king of the Eastern Sea would save their village.
Well, I am heading there myself, and I will bring it back for you.
Well, the villagers were happy to find someone else to help them, and they also offered Chen a boat to aid him in his journey to the Eastern Sea. Seeing, however, the villagers needed the boat more than he, Chen declined their offer.
Oh, I am strong enough to swim the river.
And with that, Chen dove into the river and began to swim downstream to the Eastern Sea. When he arrived at the Eastern Sea, the water was rough and stormy. Lightning flashed, thunder crashed, and rain fell in sheets, and the wind blew the tops off the waves. And as the monstrous waves crashed onto the shore, Chen noticed a small figure crouched at the foot of the exposed cliff. It was Li. He had been there for days, too afraid to move or to even go near the water. Without stopping to think, Chen hurled himself into the huge waves and began fanning the water with his magic fan. The water immediately rolled back and cleared a space for him to walk through. Meekly, Li immediately moved to follow his brother, silently. The brothers arrived at the immense gates of the Dragon King's palace. Seaweed hung like green bunting over the huge archway, and the golden gates themselves were decorated with many wondrous seashells. The great Dragon King himself was there to meet the brothers, although they had no idea that he was Li Mei's father.
"Oh, I am very pleased to see both of you. Ah, I've been expecting you for some time. Now, please, follow me to the royal treasury."
The treasury turned out to be a small cave guarded by two enormous sea dragons. At a nod of the Dragon King's head, the great dragons moved aside to reveal a massive pearl-studded door fashioned from the shell of giant clams. The doors were swung open, and the brothers discovered that it was bursting with gems and jewels and riches collected from the ocean and salvaged from ships that had sunk at sea.
"Ah, you may view all of my treasures, but you may only select one item each."
Li soon found a huge basket of pearls and picked out the largest one with the most dazzling light. Oh, it flashed like a mirror or a ship's beacon on a dark night. Once he had secured the best pearl, he looked about at the chests of rare gems and jewels. He tried to grab a handful of gemstones and stuff it into his pocket, but a sharp-eyed guard saw him and ushered him out of the treasury. Chen also saw the pearls, but he remembered his promise to the villagers.
Amongst all of the brilliant treasures, he spied the wondrous golden dipper of the great Dragon King. With this magical dipper, he knew that the village could be saved, and he selected it as his prize.
When he came outside of the treasury, he found that his brother had already left for the surface, leaving him behind. Oh, the great Dragon King felt sorry for Chen and personally escorted him to the edge of his kingdom. Of course, Li reached the flooded village first, and the villagers were very happy to see him.
"Oh, young man, were you able to bring the golden dipper from the great Dragon King?" "Oh, bah, the Dragon King, he was cold-hearted, and he would not lend it to me."
Before the villagers could question him further, Li leapt onto his horse and rode off, leaving the villagers sadly disappointed. A little while later, Chen arrived and gave the villagers the golden dipper from the great Dragon King. Oh, the people were overjoyed and began to scoop the water from their lands with the magic dipper. At once, the floodwaters rolled back to the river, revealing an enormous oyster sitting on the riverbed. And inside of that enormous oyster was a huge black pearl.
An oyster such as this had not been seen for many generations. The villagers took it to be a good omen. For saving their village, the villagers presented Chen with that huge black pearl with their thanks and best wishes.
Chen was delighted. It was not the luminous pearl that the princess had requested, but it was lovely, and he was grateful for the generosity of the villagers. He thanked them for their kindness and set off to return home. Well, both brothers arrived at the bend in the river on the very night of the full moon. Once again, moonbeams cascaded down from the heavens and illuminated the entire area with strange silvery light. Shooting stars arced across the sky, adding their own shimmering light to the magical scene. Once again, there, standing in the clearing near the bend in the glittering river, Chen saw the princess Li Mei, standing in front of the brothers in all of her shimmering radiance. Well, both brothers bowed and presented their pearls.
"Oh, thank you for your gifts. When the full moon rises above the mountains, then we shall see how these pearls shine and which one is the luminous pearl of the great dragon king of the eastern sea?
Well, Lee was very confident. When the moon rose high in the sky, above the mountain peaks, Li Mei pulled out his gorgeous luminous pearl. But something was wrong.
Mysteriously, the glow that shone so brightly in the Dragon King's treasure room was now gone. The pearl lay dead, dull, and lifeless in the princess's hand.
Li snatched it from her and furiously polished the pearl on his dirty sleeve,
but it remained the same.
Chen's black pearl, on the other hand, shone with the fire and brilliance of 10 million stars. It was so bright that Li had to cover his eyes and turn away.
And when he turned back and could see again, he found that he was sitting alone at the bend in the river. Li Mei and Chen had disappeared. They were soon married, and like all fairy tale couples, lived happily ever after.
The fairy tale sponsor for this episode is Jack and Jill Personal Injury Insurance. Life has twists and turns and tumbles. If you've been set on a task important to a fairy tale, folktale, even a body limerick, and are injured, take your claim to Jack and Jill. They know what it's like to break a crown and other bones, and know the fairy tale world can be unforgiving when it comes to eating your lunch instead of sharing it. If you think you were set up in your story for failure, Jack and Jill Personal Injury Insurance will make sure you are compensated. This episode is also brought to you by the Patreon supporter Ingrid Nixon. You've heard Ingrid on the podcast before, and her version of Hansel and Gretel in episode 13 is one of my favorite versions of that story. She has traveled the world and is a supporter of the arts, and a big thank you to her and all the other patrons. I got out of bed and moved to the window, straining my ears. Yes, that was Yellow Submarine. I looked around the yard for anyone whistling and, to my relief, didn't find anyone. That would have been a bit creepy to see someone singing in my yard. But where was that song coming from? I scanned the trees, the birds hopping and flitting from branch to branch, and my eyes caught sight of a bird up on the electric wire above my house. His feathers bright yellow, his song rather distinct. The feathers on his head flopped down, giving him a look like a member of a popular band. I laughed, but maybe a little too loudly, because he flew away. But in the mornings, I lay in bed and listen for Ringo the Canary. The second story for this episode is by Richard Martin, a storyteller from England who tells beautiful tales and puts them on Vimeo for people to watch. If you're interested in seeing him tell this story, then follow the links on storystorypodcast.com. Until then, he spins a tale with one of the most mysterious myths and creatures from the sea. In the story, The Wounded Selkie.
From Scotland, and those of you who have been there, perhaps you have seen those beautiful animals in the sea, the seals. And if you see them, you'll find they come up and look at you with their dark, round eyes. And you think what wonderful animals those seals are. But up there in Scotland, they first of all have another name for the seals. They call them the Selkie. And not everyone likes the Selkie. Not everyone loves the Selkie. And this is a tale from the Orkney Islands, those islands to the north of mainland. And up there, there was a fisherman, and he hated the Selkie. He hated the Selkie because each day he would take his boat and he would row across the still, calm, or rough and cold waters as ever they were. And he would put down a net hanging there from a float on the surface. And then he'd row on and put down another net and another and another. And when all his nets were out, at the end of the day, he would return to the first and he'd haul that net up. And if he was lucky, there'd be good fish in there. Enough to eat, perhaps enough to sell, enough to be down at the pub that night. But, of course, sometimes those fish in the nets, they were bitten. And sometimes the nets were ripped so badly he could not even repair them. He just had to throw them overboard. And then he'd say, ah, the bloody Selkie. He did not love the Selkie. Now, there was one particular place where this fisherman had always had good fishing. It was just off the north tip of one of the small islands, the island of Westry, an island I had been on myself. And the north tip of Westry is where the cliffs come high, and there's a footpath along right to the edge of the cliff. And I've walked that path myself, and it was off there that day after day, year after year, he would have good fish, but this particular summer, why there, day after day, he'd haul those nets up, and always the fish were bitten. The nets were so often ripped, he'd lost so many nets that summer. But one day, at last, when the sea was calm and the sun was shining, at last he said, enough. Today is the day for revenge. And he began by putting down an anchor, and he tied his boat fast to the anchor rope. And then he put down that net, the net hanging there from the float on the surface. And then he took off his clothes, and he sat naked in the boat. By his side, his knife. And he waited and waited, and the boat was rocking gently. And suddenly, he heard something pulling down on that float. He looked down through the clear, cold waters. He could see a shape, grey shape, twisting and turning against the net. Ah, the bloody Selkie! With a knife between his teeth, down he dived, and he swam deeper and deeper and deeper until he came up behind that Selkie, and he took that knife and he stabbed and he ripped. He saw the dark red blood well out into the clear, cold waters. Now that Selkie, still with a knife deep at his side, the Selkie twisted and turned so much that the knife was pulled from the fisherman's hand. He saw the knife spinning slowly down to the bottom of the sea. Well, he could not go down after it. He had no air in his lungs. He had to get up to breathe. But as he was swimming up, he thought, I may have lost the knife, but that one Selkie won't be troubling my nets again. But the next day, when he came to haul those nets up, they were empty. Not a single fish. Oh, that happens sometimes when you're fishing. But it was the same the next day. And the day after. And the day after that. Soon, the fisherman realized he was under the curse of the Selkie. Soon he stopped taking his boat out onto the water. What was the point? Instead, he'd lean on the harbour wall and gaze over the grey waters and curse his luck out and curse the Selkie. But he was doing that one day and he heard a voice behind him. Hey, you! Behind him was a stranger. A stranger with a hat pulled low over his face. Hey, I've been looking for you. I'm told you might be able to help me. I want someone to get me some Selkie skins. Selkie skins? Kill a few Selkie. I'm your man for that. But you have to pay. Ooh. Pay. Don't know about that. You better come with me and I'll take you to my master. So the stranger took the fisherman and together they walked out of the village and they walked along the footpath which goes over the cliff, on the edge of the cliff at the north tip of Westbury. And when they came to where the path is right on the edge of the cliff, the stranger stopped, put his hands to his mouth, turned over the waters, and called, "Oh, no, no." And the fishermen saw the waters were empty no longer, for coming to the stranger's call was a selkie. And still the stranger called, "Oh, no, no, no." Until suddenly the fisherman heard and felt his hand on his shoulder, the stranger's hand pulling him over the edge. Together, the two of them were falling down towards the waters, but as they hit the sea, the fisherman saw the stranger had turned into a selkie. It was no longer a hand, but the selkie's teeth on his shoulder, pulling him down, 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 deeper and deeper through the clear cold water. And down they went, and down they went. And soon the fisherman knew he had no more air in his lungs. Soon he knew he would have to open his mouth. Soon he knew when he did so, the blackness would cover his eyes. But when the fisherman opened his eyes, he saw him standing on the bed of the sea, the stranger beside him, a man again, a stranger who pointed out in front of a large rock on the bed of the sea the body of a young man, a body of a young man lying there, grey with approaching death, grey all except the long red wound from his shoulder to his groin. "There's my son lying there, dying. And this is your knife." "It is. And you have brought me here for your revenge?" "Revenge? Revenge I could have, but revenge would not help my son. It would not help my son, because only the hand that made the wound can heal the wound." "Heal the wound? How can I heal the wound?" "Easy. Just put out your hand and touch it." And so the fisherman put out his hand and touched the young man on the top of his wound. And as he pulled down his hand, oh yes, yes, he could see that the wound was closing, the wound was healing. But all that body was cold, cold with approaching death. And as the fisherman pulled down his hand further and further, the cold came more and more into his own hand. Into his own hand, and the cold came up into the fisherman's shoulder. The fisherman felt the cold spreading around his own heart. And the cold was so painful, and it gripped his heart. He knew soon that he would fall to the floor, and the blackness would cover his eyes. But when at last he opened his eyes, the fisherman found he was no longer under the sea. He was on that narrow strip of beach under the cliff off the north tip of Westry. He was alive. He could still feel the pain, but he was alive. And by his side was a pile of his old fishing nets, all beautifully repaired, and on top of those nets lay his knife. So you can well imagine, in the years after, as he'd haul up his nets, why, there were usually enough fish to eat. Often there were enough fish to sell. Sometimes, of course, Those fish, they were bitten. Sometimes the nets were ripped, but he'd only say, "That's only the Selkie, and they need to live as well as I." And that is the end of my tale.
Thank you for listening to the Story Story Podcast. Share the love. Find Alton Chung and Richard Martin on the internet. Tell them you heard them on the podcast and now want to hear them tell more stories. You can find me and the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Story Story Podcast or Rachel Ann Harding. The idea for this week's fairy tale sponsor came from the beautiful brain of Fergal Lynn. The inspiration for the true fairy tale was inspired by the story seed from Laura Packer. You can find her lovely story and writing prompts by looking her up on social media. While you're there, check out the ads for the fairy tale sponsors and let me know the favorite stories you have heard or the favorite stories of your childhood. If you would like to become a supporter of the podcast for as little as $4 a month, you can find links on storystorypodcast.com and hear me read your name and thank your beautiful face for the world to hear. This week, the story for the patrons is a new traditional story by Danielle Ballone called Tuesday and the Swamp Lady. If it isn't in the cards to support the podcast right now, no worries. Perhaps you'd be willing to go write a review on iTunes, which helps other story lovers find and enjoy the podcast. Head over to the website, join the mailing list for hidden goodies, and if you tune in, you will hear more stories next week. But until then, live happily ever after.
Mary-Kate opened up the door, and there, on the doorstep, wrapped in his own blanket, was her baby.
And to this day, Anansi spins webs so that he can catch the flea, the fly, and the moth that got away.
If you go down to the lake on a clear day, when the water lies as calm as a sheet of glass, you can still see the rooftops of the castle glittering in the sunlight. And if you listen really closely, you can even hear the